How's it going, everybody? This is me again, Chewy, one of the hosts of the podcast titled Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends. And I am once again joined by my good friend Monica.
Hi, guys.
So, Monica, you were telling me about your week. You had a nice incident at work today.
My boss just gave me money out of nowhere, and it was very nice. and unexpected. So I feel very appreciated, and I'm very, very happy right now.
Are you guys hiring?
Actually, yes. They are.
Mm-hmm. Can I do work from home?
You would have to live here in California, so.
I can't do work from home from Texas?
No. apparently, that's not how it works.
And you just get a cash app. Here you go, Chewy, 100 bucks, just for being a good employee. That'd be awesome, dude. Nah, that's in high contrast with my job, because today was Friday. Well, it's no longer Friday right now. It's already Saturday, early morning. But Fridays are usually the busiest days for me because there's nobody in the store except for me and one other person.
Mm-hmm.
And in our section, because the drum guy is gone, he's off on Fridays. And the people in the back aren't working in the store right now because they're installing speakers for schools and for graduations and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not there in the store. And it was crazy because my friend went to lunch and literally everyone and their mom came in at the same time. Like, as soon as my friend walked to lunch.
Damn.
So I had to call somebody from like the front of the store to help me, and I was there and talking to five people at once, and it was not fun. So I had a stressful day, and that's why I'm rewarding myself with a nice beer.
Nice.
So yeah, I don't want to let that negativity seep into our podcast, though. So let's go ahead, Monica, and remind listeners of our social media accounts. We have our Facebook under Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends, and we have our Instagram under Myths Behind LGDS.
Our Twitter is Myths Behind LGDS, and you can also email us at mythsbehindlegends@gmail.com.
Awesome. And we also have a Letterboxd in which you can follow us, you can like our reviews, you can pick a movie from the watch list and maybe recommend we watch that one next, or I don't know, it's your party, it's your profile, you can do whatever you want, you can make your own lists, you can make your own watch list, you can make your own reviews, so let's go ahead and have you guys follow us under, and that is also as under Myths Behind LGDS. And the moment that Monica was waiting for.
Oh yes, my favorite part.
We have our website URL that I finally got around to update the other day.
Woo!
So I'm on the works. I want to get some more stuff printed, like little postcards with that awesome 3D logo that the guys from Superhero Podcast made from us, or for us, rather.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, our website URL is under myths-behind-legends.mailchimpsites.com.
Yes.
So under we have a whole bunch of stuff, some pictures that I edited to make it look creepy, some nice info on our merchandise too if you want to buy some of that stuff. I'm going to update that for sure as soon as I get the other stuff printed, but I'm kind of in between stuff right now. I'm also working on a music project of my own, so I am hoping to release a music EP, my friend, in the next, within 2 months. So hopefully in time for my birthday, I'll be releasing some original music.
Yay!
That people can enjoy. So,
awesome.
Now, the moment of truth, Monica, is you got to come clean with our audience here. And, you apparently watched the wrong film for this episode, didn't you?
So there's two Ravenous movies. One was from 2017. That's based in Quebec. And the one that I was supposed to watch is the one from 1999 or something. About, like, based in the freaking Civil War. I watched the wrong movie, so I have no idea what we're talking about today, but I'm going to give it my best.
Well, now, in the spirit of truth, do you ever really have any idea what we're talking about?
I mean, sometimes I feel like I do, but then obviously, you know, I lose sight of things. I do what I can, okay?
Well, that's me for sure, because I usually I have some sort of beer or alcohol in my system. So by halfway through a podcast, I'm already a little drunk. So
yeah.
So yes, we are definitely going to discuss the movie Ravenous from 1999, I believe, not the 2017 one. So I hope you can maybe give us some commentary on what what I talked to you about, because it's gonna be a little weird, but I mean I think we can make it work.
Yeah.
Because I believe you watched some sort of summary real quick on YouTube or something, right?
Yes, I did.
So I mean it's nothing too deep, but I mean we'll make it work. Don't worry. So yes, we are gonna go into our critique segments in which we'll talk about the movie, and that's gonna happen right after this break. Stick around. Okay guys, so we are now at our critique segment in which we talk about the movie, the way the movie was shot, the scenery, the music, the sound design, the acting, etc. So now Monica, just to get you a little bit caught up to speed, I don't know what video you might have watched for the summary or the recap, but the movie is, I thought when I was when I talked about it last week, rather, right before we ended that episode, that it was set sometime in the Civil War, but it's actually set in the time of the Mexican War, so it's about 20 years before that.
Okay.
And the timeline, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so the movie actually had some scenes shot in location in Mexico. In the very beginning, the guy is, I mean, you know the movie's about a soldier, right?
Yeah.
Or a group of soldiers that they're kind of housed in a fort somewhere in the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a few flashback scenes in which you kind of get some of the backstory from the main guy. His name is Captain Void. Well, he's not a captain in the beginning of the movie. He becomes captain because he's a hero. But you actually find out that he becomes a hero because he played dead. Like, they were fighting a battle, right, in the Mexican War, somewhere in the desert of Arizona or something like that. And so he sees all the carnage going on around him, and he kind of just like plays dead. He like all his friends are shouting, "Hey man, help me! Like, you know, I need help over here. We need reinforcements, whatever." And he's kind of just like throws his gun on the floor, and he just kinda, like plays dead like a little dog, you know?
Wow! Just
throws himself in the dirt and just kind of like pretends he's dead. He doesn't move for hours. And then the Mexican army, for some reason, loads up all the bodies and puts him in the cart. And takes him to their fort, and this guy, like, gets out of the cart after he's been laying there with dead bodies for, like, I don't know how many hours. And supposedly, he single-handedly captured the Mexican fort.
Like, wow.
Like, todo Rambo, like, you know. And, well, that was part, like a very minimal part of the movie. I think it's, like, maybe, like, the first 10 minutes happened like that.
Okay.
But that was actually shot in Mexico. The rest of the movie, though, was shot in Europe, because, I mean, in the story, it's set in your neck of the woods in California.
Ooh, sweet.
Somewhere in the Sierra Nevada mountains, because it's cold AF. It's, like, a lot of snow for a good part of the movie, yeah. Those scenes, like, in the fort, I believe, were shot somewhere in the Czech Republic in Europe.
Okay.
And then the scenes in which they're walking around in the forest, because at one point they venture out into the forest for a mission. They were shot in the country of Slovakia and some forest over there. I had the name here somewhere, but I can't find it right now. So
over the place.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. As a California resident, my friend, do you think your town looks anything like the Czech Republic or like Slovakia?
No. Not at all.
I mean, you live in a civilized area, though.
Yeah, I mean, well, actually, I live in the middle of nowhere, so I mean, I'm, like, on the outskirts of, like, some random freaking city in California, but, I mean, it looks like it could be Mexico, but definitely not Slovakia or anything like that. There's not enough trees.
I mean, in the movie, you saw a lot of trees. Do you guys have a lot of trees over there?
In San Diego and, like, the more metropolitan areas of the state, yeah. I mean, I've never been to Northern California. I know there's a lot of trees over there, though. That's where all the forests are at. But, I mean, not like that. Like, you don't see, like, I never see forests where I'm at. Like, but, I mean, like I said, like, I'm, like, in Southern California. It's different in the other side of California.
I don't think they mentioned that the name of the town. I mean, they mentioned the name of the fort, but I don't know what city is or what town or village is, because it's in the 1800s.
Yeah.
I don't know which city or town or whatever is close to that fort, but I guess it must have been set in Northern California because, like I mentioned, there's a lot of snow. And do you get snow where you live?
No, it does not. It's super hot.
So maybe it's somewhere close to Oregon?
Yeah, that makes more sense. And there's forests over there too, so yeah.
There's like a lot of timber, no? Somewhere in...
Mm-hmm. Or, yeah.
Stuff like that. Huh. So, there are... Like, the way this movie was shot or filmed...
Mm-hmm.
Is pretty peculiar. Because I think primarily, of course, it's meant to be a horror movie.
Yeah.
But it's not a traditional horror movie in the sense that you would think of a horror movie. There's a lot of weird stuff thrown around. The music, for example, the soundtrack, I don't know if you've heard a piece of that. If you didn't, you should. Like,
it's very weird, yeah.
Because there's a lot of weird repeating themes that also have, like, dissonant melodies. And if you're not familiar with music terminology, that may make no sense to you. But if you hear the music, you would know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a constant, like, I don't know if it's a mandolin or a banjo playing in the background while everything else is playing, and it doesn't go, quote-unquote,
yeah.
Like, it doesn't, like, fit musically, but I guess that adds some tension to the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
But also, there are scenes in which it's, like, a scary scene,
okay,
but, like, a funny sounding theme plays in the background.
Uh-huh.
It kind of sounds like that Benny Hill, that, like, the people chasing after everybody. Like, you've seen those little cartoons?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Ding, like, ding, 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 ding. Something like that, right? Like,
yeah.
With a really shrill, what's it called? Fiddle, I guess? Like,
I don't know if it's that one, but, like, the one that I was thinking about is, it has, like brass, like,
da 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 da
da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da da The superimposition of, like, hilarious music to creepy, you know,
yeah.
Like, that's kind of, I mean, I thought it was cool, and I'm not dissing on the soundtrack. I mean, I thought it was pretty cool, or the score, at least, the musical score.
Mm-hmm.
There's also scenes in the movie themselves that kind of, like, are funny, but I guess unintentionally.
Okay.
Or, I don't know if it is unintentional or intentional, because it just doesn't, like, seem like something you would see in, like, a traditional horror movie, like I said earlier.
Yeah.
So it's a very interesting movie to watch, my friend. You should definitely catch it sometime. It's a trip.
Yeah.
It's a very trip. And talking about the acting, the actors, I think, really drove the personalities of their characters home. Like, they actually did a good job, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Without it being, like, Oscar-worthy or Broadway or anything like that. I mean, I thought they did okay. They did good. I mean, I've seen acting that is not as good as this in other movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, I mean, it has a really good cast, too. It has, like, that guy, the main dude. Who plays him?
It's the guy from Memento, Guy Pearce.
Yeah, Guy Pearce. Uh-huh, that's what I was going to say. Okay, so, and then there's that other guy that, I don't remember what his name is, but he comes out in the show called Once Upon a Time, and he plays the freaking Rumpelstiltskin, and he's actually Scottish. I didn't know that, like, until now.
Mm-hmm.
That guy's also really good. I know I've seen him in other things, but I can't remember from the top of my head, but he's a really good actor. And randomly, there's that dude, Arquette, what's his name?
Oh, yeah, David Arquette.
Yeah, I'm like, what was this guy doing there? Like, he doesn't really quite fit in the little group, but it was interesting.
Yeah, there's definitely a very good cast in this, and it's a shame because this movie wasn't very successful, apparently. It didn't make any money in the theaters. I think it made somewhere like around $2 million on like a $15 million budget.
Damn.
So it was a big bomb. And I don't understand because, I mean, I'm not saying this movie's a masterpiece, because it's not, but it's not terrible. Yeah. Like, I mean, I've seen worse movies than this get more money or even win awards, for example.
Yeah. But,
yeah, so you mentioned, I don't know if the guy you're thinking about is who I'm thinking about, because the guy that plays the main villain, Colonel Ives,
yeah,
is the name of the character. His name is, the actor is Robert Carlyle.
Yeah, that guy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so he's the Scottish one?
Yeah.
This guy has been in other movies that I like. He's been in, actually he came out in 28 Weeks Later, I think.
Oh, yes, yeah, I was trying to remember where I had seen him. Yeah, that's where he's from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he plays the dad in that movie, like the one that abandons his family or something.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that's another awesome movie that I think we should do at some point.
I love that movie. That one and 28 Days Later, that was my favorite back then.
Yeah, definitely. And, well, this guy is a great actor. I mean, I've always liked him in pretty much anything that I've seen him in. For example, like the 28 Weeks Later, he was great in that. He also played a villain in one of the Bond movies. My favorite James Bond, full disclaimer, is Pierce Brosnan, because that's my generation's Bond.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone, of course, I mean, Sean Connery is probably the best one of all time. Mm-hmm. But I grew up watching Pierce Brosnan.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What's the name of the most recent one?
Daniel Craig.
Oh, he's the sexiest one, though.
That is your generation's Bond, my friend.
Okay. My generation is Pierce Brosnan. But whatever.
I mean, not to say anything bad about Daniel Craig. I mean, he's done a phenomenal job. I actually haven't seen the last movie, Spectre. I haven't seen that one.
Okay.
I've seen Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, and what was the other one?
Skyfall,
yeah. That was awesome. That was a great movie. But I haven't seen Spectre or the one that's going to come out sometime next year, obviously, because, you know, it's not out there. But, well, anyways, we're kind of taking a little tangent here. But, yeah, Robert Carlyle was...
We always do that.
It's understandable. So, yeah, this guy, Robert Carlyle, he was a villain in, I think... Nah, my favorite Pierce Brosnan movie is GoldenEye, for sure. But anyways, he was in a good movie also, with Bond. But there's other guys. Yeah, like you mentioned, David Arquette, he's like a... I've always thought he's kind of a weird actor. Like, not bad weird. Not in a weird way, but or bad weird, but he's just like... weird, because I don't think he fits the roles he plays very well. He always has this like kind of like I don't know if I want to call it a boyish charm to his roles, because I guess that's the best way to say it.
Yeah,
even when he's playing the character of Dewey in Scream.
Uh-huh. He's such a dork in that movie.
Yeah, like... exactly, yeah, that's what I meant to say, like a dork, like kind of like a like naive kind of personality. But I mean, he has a few scenes in this movie, but he does pretty good in them. I think he and there's a dream sequence in which the main guy, Guy Pierce, no pun intended, main guy. I'll see myself out right now. he has a, I mean, because I don't think we've spoken about the point in the movie at all, which is it's centered on cannibalism.
Yeah.
And also on the Wendigo myth.
But yeah, it is about the Wendigo. Like, I saw that in the video that I was, like, looking at. And it talks about how, like, the Wendigo is insatiable, basically. And the guy that made the video, and I can't remember who it was off the top of my head. I'll figure it out later. But the guy was kind of comparing it to, like, American society and, like, American greed, I guess, how in capitalism and like how we always like just consume, we're never satisfied, we just want more and more, and that's kind of like what the Wendigo is. And they make a lot of references to the United States too, like there's American flags everywhere too. But I mean, it's these soldiers were American, right? Some of them.
No, they were all from the U.S. Army. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It still was not the Civil War. It was still the U.S. Army, not the Northern Army.
Okay.
I guess that's kind of an interesting way to put it, because the whole point of this guy, and we'll talk more about him in the Know Thine Enemy segment, but the whole point of this guy is that he discovers that because he was terminally ill from tuberculosis in the story, and somebody tells him about the Wendigo myth, and he actually eats the person that tells him the myth,
wow.
I guess to prove his point.
Mm-hmm.
And he claims that after, you know, doing that for a few more times, his tuberculosis disappeared and he was, like, in full health. So, basically, in this movie, the mythology proves correct. Like, if you consume the flesh or the blood of your enemies, or the person you had to kill, for that matter, then you gain their strength and you actually gain, like, a healing factor, kind of like Wolverine, because you can sustain injuries, but you recover from them, like, as soon as you have, like, some sort of, like, you know, like, a human steak or something. Like your skin, like by the next day you're like almost 100% healed.
Wow.
You know, in the movie, right?
So, right.
And the way this guy gets involved, Guy Pierce, again. Sorry. So when I told you about that scene in which he was captured, you know, because he was playing dead,
mm-hmm.
he was sitting in the cart with dead bodies for so long that there was blood dripping all over his face.
Damn.
So at some point, I guess he got hungry and started drinking that blood or something.
Oh, that's gross.
So he became, like, inadvertently a Wendigo himself, in a way. Because mm-hmm. you see him, he can't eat normal food anymore, apparently, like, that much. Basically, they cut out the steak from the cow's body and just serve it on the plate.
Ew.
It looks that red, like, it looks super red. So everyone around him is eating the steak red, and he's just like, ugh, this is gross, and he, like, even throws up and everything. But it's because he's already transforming into this thing. So part of the process, I guess, in this movie is that you can't consume regular food anymore because the guy, the villain, Colonel Ives,
mm-hmm.
he doesn't eat regular food anymore. He only eats food made from human flesh.
Ew, bro.
So yeah, that's kind of gross, dude. And there aren't too many death scenes. I mean, there aren't too many characters to begin with, and most of them die. I think only like two or three characters that came out of this movie actually survived. But I thought the gore effects in the death scenes were pretty good. I mean, the blood is believable. They don't go over the top. They don't try to, you know, do anything too crazy. It's just like, I guess it's gonna sound weird for me to say this, but it's like serviceable. It's okay, like, you know. It looks believable, I guess. That's what I'm trying to say. So, I guess the last thing I'll say before we give this movie the rating is that it's a redemption journey because, like I mentioned, Void, Captain Void, he starts off being a coward because he plays dead in that battle.
Yeah.
But ultimately, he finds out through a Native American character by the name of Martha that he needs to die along with the Wendigo, because like that's the only way to kill one, I guess, is if you sacrifice yourself.
Okay.
You know, so
then you redeem yourself. Yeah.
Uh huh. So in the very end, he does just that. He fights Colonel Ives. That's another reason why this movie is, I think, interesting to watch. Because it doesn't look like a very choreographed battle. It looks improvised. Like the entire scene of them fighting each other at the very end.
Uh-huh.
It looks like they were just kind of like, okay, you hit me and then I'll hit you and we'll just like do it this way and you know, just see what happens. So it looks like it wasn't like scripted at all. It just looks improvised.
Yeah.
And at the very end, he sets up this like gigantic bear trap that's like, I don't know, like 10 feet long, whatever.
Jesus.
It's huge. So he sets it down and he gets both of them trapped and they both die, right? In each other's arms.
Wow.
It's kind of a weird scene, like, but I mean, and it's funny because as he's dying, Colonel Ives is saying like, well, if you die first, I'm going to eat you and heal myself. So like the question is, Boyd, if you die or if I die, are you going to eat me to survive? And he doesn't. He actually doesn't. He actually lets, you know, nature take its course.
Die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is a redemption of sorts for him because he allowed himself to sacrifice himself, or, you know, to die, I guess. he sacrificed himself for the better of humanity in this case, you know.
Interesting.
So, I don't know if you want to give this movie a rating because you didn't see it, but I will.
Go for it.
So, I'm going to give this movie, and I'm getting a little clever here. I'm going to give this movie 6 out of 10 wild wannabe Wendigos.
Interesting. I like your units.
There's alliteration there, my friend. 3 W's.
Wow.
Wild wannabe Wendigos. 6 out of 10. Yeah, I'm such a nerd. I'm sorry, guys. plus, this beer's already kind of like hitting me. So.
Wow.
So, you got any final comments, my friend, before we move on to our academic segments?
I did. That guy that was reviewing the movie did talk about how there's a lot of homoeroticism in the movie.
Uh-huh.
I think one of them might have been in that during that fight scene. Mm-hmm. There's like a lot of like, I don't know, like it kind of seems like Colonel Ives wants Voight in both like flesh to consume and eat and flesh to just, you know,
he wants his
get
meat.
It.
He wants his meat.
He wants his meat in every way possible, basically, yes.
Well, yeah. At the very end, he reveals his scheme, and I guess we can say, like, you know, whatever, spoilers for, like, a 30-year-old movie, whatever. But he reveals Colonel Ives, that is, that his plan is to create a, you know, some sort of safe haven for cannibals. And he wants Boyd to be a part of that with him. I guess that's his, like, second-in-command, whatever.
Yeah, so. Or his, like, you know, his partner.
His main boo.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's hoping for that, my friend. You never know. Besides that, I don't know if I caught anything else. I mean, it's possible. I'm not gonna deny it or say that it's not the case, but I don't know. I mean, there is a scene actually, now that I think about it, and like halfway through the movie, in which they go on like a expedition to supposedly rescue some other people that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a trap by Colonel Ives, by the way, but, you know, he drives the soldiers out into the wilderness so he can kill them off one by one.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a part in which one of them gets injured, and they treat his wounds, but he's still kind of, like, bleeding, because, I mean, of course, medicine isn't advanced back then, so they just kind of just put, a cloth in him and kind of just, okay, hold it, and, you know.
Yeah.
So he's still dripping. His blood's still dripping. Uh-huh. And he wakes up in the middle of the night because Colonel Ives is licking his wounds.
Ew, bro.
And his wounds are kind of like in, like, not right on, but close to the pelvic area, so.
Dang, he wants it. Wow.
So, I mean, now that you mentioned it, I guess it is possible that this guy was kind of like, you know, mm-hmm, looking for it.
Trying to get it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so. Nice. I want to hear more about whatever this video is about, because that sounds interesting. All right, so we'll be right back with the critique segment after these messages.
Hey there, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Agnes.
And together, we are Sass and Sips, a watch, rewatch podcast.
We want to personally invite you to check out our podcast, where we'll be discussing TV shows from two perspectives.
One who has seen the show before.
And one who's not so sure. While we drink a lot. I mean, like a lot.
Every season, we will focus on a new show. And for our first season, we have chosen the iconic show Lost.
We hope that you will come over and check us out.
We can be found on your favorite podcast platform or at sassandsips.com. If you're down for drinks, friends, and television, then make sure you listen and subscribe.
Because we're down for all of it.
Yes. Woo-hoo. So listen with your bestie, open your favorite bottle, and sip and sass with Sass and Sips.
All right, so I guess it's time to get a little serious, because this is going to be a serious part of our podcast episode, my friend.
Ooh.
This is, by the way, the academic segment in which we connect the topic of a movie or show or whatever the topic is with something from history or real life, etc. So I ask you a question, my friend, since you've been a little quiet today.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of an incident or the famous incident of the Donner Party?
The Dahmer Party. I feel like I should know this, and I'm gonna say that I assume it was a gathering in which a lot of cannibalism took place.
Sort of, but there's a like a tragic backstory to all this. So
enlighten me.
You've heard of course, like the Gold Rush and the Oregon Trail and all that stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
Like when people migrated from the east of America, the Midwest maybe, into California.
For gold. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this happened maybe a little bit before that or sometime around that era. Basically, there was a group of people that got together and decided to head to California in search for better fortunes. Now, put yourself in that position. Like, you have maybe a modest home somewhere. You have a family, maybe some kids. You're making a living somehow. I mean, in probably some sort of trade. Like, you're probably like a blacksmith or a seamstress or something like that, right? Because that's kind of what was happening in those times. Like, there weren't like any office jobs or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Unless you were educated and went to college and you could read and write. Because back then, a lot of people couldn't do that. I don't think. Mm-hmm. So most people were probably farmers or some sort of like, you know, trade workers. Right? Yeah. So somebody comes along to like, a friend of yours or, you know, something like that. And they're like, hey, you know, my family is moving to California. Why don't you guys join us? Okay. Because we hear there's a lot of better opportunities over there. There's a lot of gold. You can get rich and you can, you know, make a better living than what you have here.
Mm-hmm.
And so your family decides, you know what, let's pack up all our belongings. Let's sell our house and you know, just head out and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
For a better future for our kids and everything. That was what happened with this. Basically, like a whole bunch of families got together.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to move from wherever they were from and head to California. So basically, they made a lot of wrongful decisions that contributed to their ultimate doom, mind you.
Damn.
It's going to get a little grim today, so bear with us, guys. We're not going to joke around because this is very serious, so they're heading out, and allegedly they took out late in the season because the best time to take off, if you're going to do that indeed, was to leave sometime around April.
Mm-hmm.
But these families left from Missouri. There it is. I knew it said where they were from. So they left from Missouri around mid-May, so about a month later than what would have been the optimal time for this.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of like the first, I guess, wrongful decision. Maybe bad decision. Yeah, I mean, there's not really any way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
So the familiar trail. Now, let me ask you this. You're traveling and things are going okay. I mean, for the most part, they're kind of like, you know, of course, you're dealing with the discomforts of driving a wagon for hours every day.
Mm-hmm.
Because, mind you, there's no cars, no planes, nothing like that. So you're riding in a wagon pulled by horses or mules or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, all things considered, it's going okay. You know, you have, you know, water, you have food. It's going kind of okay. But there is a trail that a person by the name of Lansford Hastings, who was allegedly an adventurer and some sort of like, what do I want to call him? He's a liar, basically, but there's a word that I was looking for.
A deceitful person?
I guess a con artist?
Uh-huh, okay, yeah.
So let me ask you this. Everybody knows which way is the more familiar way. I mean, you need to go north. When you get to a certain point, to go around the mountains, you would need to head north and ride around the mountains. And mm-hmm. then when you got around them, head south back into California, which was your destination.
Okay.
This guy had written some sort of book or pamphlet saying like, oh, I found this trail that cuts your traveling time by weeks or whatever. So let me ask you this. because they had a vote, mind you. They had a vote, and this person that was by the name of James Clyman, he was a friend of some of the people in this Donner Party.
Mm-hmm.
And he told them, dude, like, just go the familiar way. Why would you want to risk heading, like, taking your families down this path that nobody knows what this guy's talking about? Like,
yeah.
Like, nobody knows who this guy is. Nobody has heard of this trail before. But, I mean, he claims to have miraculously found this open road where people can just, like, ride mm-hmm. through the mountains, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going around the mountains, his trail was through the mountains, like, you know, climbing the mountains and kind of, like, you know.
Yeah.
So, they took a vote. And guess what they chose?
To listen to this guy.
Yeah, so the Lansford Hastings guy. So, how do you have felt if you're in a family that kind of like, I mean, there's kids around, I mean, your kids, mind you, by this point, or your family, basically, because some people had siblings in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, would you have voted to go the longer way that was the more familiar one, or this miraculous new shortcut?
The longer way. You never know what you're going to encounter on the road, and why put your kids at risk?
So, in a way, it's kind of like the horror movie trope, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Kind of like, okay, you can go this on this highway, but there's a shortcut through the forest here, and, you know, and I guess, I mean, we all know what happens when people take a shortcut. In horror movies. So, what are your thoughts so far?
Well, this guy is an idiot, and this guy is going to murder them and steal their things.
That is your guess?
Yes.
Okay. So, these people, I guess, against their better judgment, decide to go through the shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they run into trouble because the trail is impossible to go through with wagons. I mean, if you're just riding like one horse, maybe you can make it.
Mm-hmm.
But according to this article that I'm reading here, which by the way is from history.com, it says that it was impossible to get through with wagons. They had to cut a lot of trees and a lot of roadblocks, like rocks and ice, because by this time it's already starting to snow.
Damn.
So eventually, after like many weeks, this shortcut, by the way, added a lot of weeks to their travel time.
Mm-hmm.
They only moved maybe like 20 miles in like a month, because they were slowed down by the fact that they had to cut down all these trees to travel, and just like the shrubbery and everything.
Yeah.
So eventually they got to this area that had some tents built around a lake, like, or not tents but cabins.
Mm-hmm.
And by this point, though, it was already winter. It was already starting to snow. So they found that it was impossible to keep traveling, because it was snowing like crazy, dude. Like, it says here that at some point it snowed several feet of snow in one day.
Damn.
So they were trapped here.
Yeah.
Not only that, but their animals started running off. So, like, the horses and the mules and the cows and everything they were traveling with, I guess not at that point specifically, but along the way, like when they were cutting the trees and everything, the cattle were just like, well, deuces, guys, and that's whatever. So they start running off, and by the time they got to this place with the cabins, they had like only a few of them left, according to this. So wow. Not only that, but their food supplies were running low.
Of course.
Apparently there was some sort of lake or river around, so I guess water wasn't, I mean, it was frozen, but you could always, like, I guess, cut a chunk of ice from the lake and thaw it in the stove or something.
True.
For water. So what started happening is that people started off dying from starvation and the cold. At this point, it had been a few weeks, maybe a couple of months, since they were trapped in there.
Mm-hmm.
So 15 people decided to go out and find help somewhere. Mind you, they had no idea pretty much where they were. They had no idea how much they had to travel to find the next village or town. So these people, as they were traveling, they started dying off one by one as they're mm-hmm. trying to find help.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that are walking with them to survive, what do you think they did?
They ate each other.
Allegedly, yeah. Allegedly what happened is the people that were still alive started consuming the flesh of the people that were dying off.
Damn.
So, what do you think of that?
I mean, they shouldn't have taken that freaking shortcut. They would have been fine. Pero nunca hacen caso. They never listen.
Yeah, dude, it's a pretty tragic story, man. I mean, I just wonder why it is, because allegedly at some point this expedition had anywhere from 80 to 90 people in it.
Yeah.
So how do so many people convince themselves, or how do you convince someone like that large amount of people to follow you into this like uncertainty, into the forest, the mountains? Because you read somewhere in a book or a magazine that this guy found a new trail that would lead you there, like, and cut your travel time by like a month or two.
This happens all the time, dude. People look at Facebook and think that everything that they see there is the truth and a fact. That's the same idea. Like, people will believe what they want to believe. They wanted to get there faster. So of course they're going to, like, if one person, if at least like two or three people agree with some random person, the others will follow. It's that whole mob mentality. It happens everywhere. And if one person, if the person who's saying this, saying like, hey, I know the way, and he acts confident and assertive, it promotes this like level of trust, perceived trust, and they're gonna follow this guy because he knows what he's talking about. I think the last president got elected. Well. I mean, it's, I don't want to get political, but that's just the thing. Like, that's why these things happen. It's because people don't actually know any better. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
I think I agree with you. If people hear something that they think makes sense to them and that is going to help them in some way or another, that they will kind of, I guess, fall in line.
Yeah.
In a way. So, I mean, as that was going on, you know, these people that went out hiking into the mountains to find help, some of those people started dying, and the survivors started eating those people. The same thing started happening over here back in the cabins. I mean, they were already done eating their animals, or whatever animals they had left, their horses, their cows. People started eating, like, I mean, after they got through with their pets.
Oh, no.
You know, they started taking the hides, like the leather,
mm-hmm.
and started trying to make, like, soup out of it, or, like, some sort of stew out of it.
Wow.
They figured that if they cook it long enough, the leather would grow soft and they could eat it.
Did it?
I don't think so. I mean, it was just hard and you know, there's no way. I don't think there's any way to make that happen, to be honest.
Damn.
So, as people started dying in the cabins too, then the survivors allegedly started eating the dead people also. So,
that's so sad.
Incredibly sad, because, I mean, all in all, I think about half of the people in this party, the Donner Party, ended up dying.
Yeah.
From the 80-something that started in this trail, I think only about 30-something or maybe like 40 made it.
Jesus.
So, now, as far as rescue efforts, I mean, some of the people that went hiking, I think 15 of them went out.
Mm-hmm.
And 7 actually made it to some sort of civilized town, and they told them, hey, we have people trapped in the mountains over there, we need to go get them.
Mm-hmm.
Even that was kind of difficult to do, because according to this article, the snow was so heavy and it was so cold in this particular winter that it took 2 months to get them all out of there. Because the trails were so hard, were so difficult to walk, they couldn't take horses up there, they didn't, to the mountains, so they had to walk. And they couldn't carry anything, like, whatever only their bodies could support as far as supplies for food and drink and everything.
Mm-hmm.
How much can a person carry? Like, 20, 30 pounds in their bag?
Especially when they haven't eaten, they're weak.
Yeah. So, I mean, the people that are going up there to rescue these people that are trapped can't take more than, like, I guess, 10, 20, maybe 30 pounds if you're, like, a really strong man.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were going up there, and I think they had 3 or 4 trips, you know, that had to go and collect the survivors. And mm-hmm. as they're doing this, more people were dying, and they were being eaten by the other people, so it's like,
wow.
It's like a never-ending cycle. Like, I mean, luckily for them, like, eventually they got all of them, but there is one person that was mentioned to be as the last guy that was there. The last person that was left, for some reason, they left one person alone, the last trip, Or I don't know if there were more people left, but he was the only one left when the last rescue expedition got to that location.
Yeah.
There was only one person left. And he was from somewhere in Europe. He wasn't American. He was from somewhere in Europe. But allegedly, according to these accounts, the guy had gone insane.
I bet.
The guy had gone insane, and his name was Louis Kesseberg. And the people that rescued him believe that he killed the other people on purpose. At this point, he was killing them.
Wow.
Like, he wasn't just waiting for them to die. He was actively killing them. But they couldn't prove that, so he, I don't think he was ever charged or judged or anything like that. So, I mean, can you imagine finding yourself in a situation like that where, like, you have to decide, well, do I let myself die, or do I eat my friend's thigh? Like,
dude, no, I can't. I don't know what I would do. That's horrible.
Because, I mean, it's one thing if they're trapped, but it's, like, spring or fall. I mean, you can still go out and find, like, a deer or something or...
During the winter, everybody's hibernation, and there's no berries, there's nothing to really forage for because everything's dead because of the snow. Like, damn.
I mean, it's kind of a Debbie Downer thing. I mean, but
yeah.
It's a historical fact. I mean, based on what I'm reading here, this account is truthful.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I really don't know what I would do because it kind of puts things in perspective. I mean, if you want to think about it, it's like, oh my god, I'm hungry, I haven't eaten all day, and you had like a freaking like 3-stack of IHOP pancakes with like bacon and sausage and all this.
Yeah.
And it's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, oh my god, I'm hungry again, right? So
you don't know we're hungry, obviously. We don't know.
I don't think we do, man. I don't think I've ever been hungry. Like, starving. That's a whole different level. Like, you haven't eaten anything for weeks.
Yeah.
Like, anything substantial. I mean, you've eaten, like, whatever, like, scraps you can find in the forest. Like, maybe, like, a couple of pecans here and there or whatever, you know, walnuts.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and I'm not trying to judge anybody, but, I mean, in a way, I think we are really, going back to what you said about greed.
Yeah.
I think we are really greedy with our food, especially.
We are.
Because maybe something of a brighter, it's got nothing to do with the Donner Party, but I don't know where I saw this video, dude. It was, I think, probably YouTube, or I don't know if it was a TV show, but it was Europeans reacting to American breakfasts.
Yeah.
So people from like England and Germany and, you know, all these countries reacting to what, you know, they were served an American breakfast to eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they gave him a choice. They gave him like a menu. Oh, so what do you want? And I was like, oh, I want this. The lumberjack special, whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guy, you know, this is talking. They're kind of just having a conversation with him. And then the server shows up with like 3 plates of food. And it's like all these pancakes and all like this eggs and hash browns.
Yeah.
And all this. And he's like, is that for one person? Or how is this for like a family? Like, is this a lot of food?
Yeah.
He's like, no, it's for one person. It's one serving. So,
yeah.
What do you think of that? Like,
I mean, dude, the way some people don't like Americans is because, like, I don't understand where that concept came from of having all this type of, like, food in front of you, and that's, like, one meal. It's ridiculous. The portions are, like, way, way too huge, more than they should be. Like, we shouldn't even be eating that much. That's why people are obese. But the thing is that, like, that's the way that we have been taught to be, like, always wanting more constantly. Greed is like a huge part of our culture, of our life. Like, and we waste so much food. Like, the fact that we have expiration dates on our food, and it's like, you know, the food's not even that bad. Like, It's sad. And I've seen, working in restaurants, how much food goes down to the trash. Like, that could be donated. That could be given to somebody, like, turned into a meal or whatever, given away. But that stuff goes in the trash. And, like, there's people out there who are starving. Like, literally don't have anything to eat. And, like, we're just throwing away food like nothing. Like,
if you had to estimate, give or take, how many pounds of food we get discarded every day in the restaurant?
Dude, I don't know. Like, hundreds of pounds. Like,
that much?
Yeah, because, like, so imagine all the times that people get... people return food because they don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Or because it's overcooked or whatever. That food goes in the trash.
Yeah.
It goes in the trash, and that's perfectly good food. But because it had something, let's say somebody had an allergy and they made the food and there was something in there that they're allergic to, they literally can't eat it, that food goes in the trash.
Mm-hmm.
And multiply that by, like, you know, 10 people, 15 people a day.
Like, that's up.
And those are big. Like, it's a lot. Like, it's ridiculous, like, how much food goes to waste. Or when, like, food stays in the fridge for too long. And, like, technically it's not fresh, so they can't use it. That goes in the trash.
Wow.
It's a lot of things. Like, it's crazy.
I do know that because, I mean, my mother works in a kitchen. She makes food.
Yeah.
She tells me that every so many hours they have to discard whatever is left in the pans.
Yeah.
If the pan is full, throw it away. If it's half full, throw it away. If it's empty, it's good for you because you sold it, but... whatever amount is left in that pan of you know,
mm-hmm.
is, if it's half full, all the way full, I mean, if it's been that long, I don't know how many, I think she told me about 2-3 hours is as long as I can have it.
Yeah.
After that point, you got to throw it away and make a new batch.
Yeah, because of the bacteria, because of, you keep going to get sick off of that, because it's food that's been, like, in a warmer or whatever for a certain amount of time, under the lamp too, like, If we had food that was waiting under, because we had heating lamps so that food could stay warm. If it'd been waiting there for too long, that food had to go to the trash too. Because technically you can't eat it anymore because it's been sitting and it could give you salmonella or whatever, especially if it was chicken or some, you know, something like that. So,
can you imagine a buffet? How much food they waste on a daily basis?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
And, but just the concept of a buffet... is ridiculous. Like,
going back to, I'm gonna eat all that I can eat. Like, literally all that I can eat. Like,
you can't eat everything. Like, even if you pay for all you can eat pasta, like, it's a gimmick. It's a sales gimmick because you pay a set price for what you're thinking is a bargain because you can eat all this food. But then the catch is you can't take that home. You can't box it up. You can't make boxes of as much food as you want for the whole week.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that. You have to eat it, technically. Nobody, unless you're trained, can eat, like, enough food to outweigh the cost of what you paid.
Yeah.
For that all-you-can-eat promotion. So, it's... and the fact that we can think, that we even have the idea that, oh, I can eat all this food. No, you can't. You can't. Like, how greedy are you? Like, dude, there's, it's, that's why we are the way we are. That's why our country has the highest obesity rates and heart attacks and heart disease and high blood pressure, because we eat foods that are ridiculously processed. We eat large amounts of it. Why?
Because we can.
Oh, because we can. Because we want to. Like, it's insane. It's insane. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a thing, actually, if you really think about it. It's kind of gross, the fact that we're eating all this junk.
I mean, full disclaimer, I like going to Chinese buffets, but I don't make it a habit to go. Even before all this pandemic stuff happened.
Yeah.
I would go maybe like once every couple of months, maybe like 3-4 times a year.
I don't like to go, dude. I feel gross every time I go into a buffet.
I had a really cool one close to my house with a closed up about 4 or 5 years ago. I was sad when that happened.
Mm.
It was a small Chinese buffet. They had a nice selection of food, but it was small, so it was quiet. It was
a nice. Was it China cafe?
No, it was some sort of I forgot what it was called.
Chopsticks?
No, it wasn't like a chain. It was just like
oh,
a.
Okay.
What was it called? I forgot, dude. But it was good. I mean, the food was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
The location was small, so you couldn't have that many people at once.
Yeah.
And yeah, so. I would go there every couple of months with my parents or friends, whatever.
It was nice. The only buffet I'll go to is the Indian food place. That's it.
Oh, the one that we go to every now and then.
Yeah. It's the only place.
That one's cool because I think they only have like 4 or 5 different dishes.
Yeah.
At once. Like, I think they have like, what, 2-3 different kinds of rice and like 2-3 different kinds of chicken and beef and that's it, you know, like, and bread. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool. I miss going there.
Me too.
But any final thoughts, my friend, on the subject of eating or the dinner party, maybe?
That's wild. Like, I mean, what else could they do? You know, there was no way other way to survive.
I think when a person finds himself in the position of I need to do whatever it takes to survive, I think people do things they normally would never even think of doing.
Mm-hmm.
In which this case, it's cannibalizing the bodies of your family members, your friends, your neighbors, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a few cases like this. Before I decided on bringing this up with the dinner party, I was thinking of doing the one of, I believe it was a soccer team in sometime in the 70s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That they had a plane accident. They were traveling to play a game somewhere in South America, I think, in the Andes.
Mm-hmm.
And their plane crashed, and like a few of them died, and the people that survived started eating the bodies of the deceased to survive until they were rescued. So I was thinking of doing that one because that's a little bit more current. But I guess I went with this because it's more of the time period of the movie.
Yeah.
So I think if we ever find ourselves speaking about cannibals again, we can always bring up that other one.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of a, again, it's a very Debbie Downer subject, you know, but...
Yeah.
It kind of goes hand in hand with what we do here. I mean, we try to relate something from... So yeah. I guess my final comment would be, do you think life imitates art or does art imitate life?
That's very philosophical.
I'm drunk, mind you, so...
I don't know how to answer it.
So what do you think?
I don't know. I think it's... either or, dude. Like, it's... I have no idea. My brain is too tired to process that.
I would say it's probably both, depending on how you look at things. But
yeah.
Because sometimes people, quote-unquote, take inspiration from something like in a movie or a piece of art or a song or something. And it doesn't have to be anything bad, actually. It can be something positive.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess since we're a horror podcast, we got to talk about the dark side of humanity here. So... And in other cases, maybe something from real life inspired somebody to draw a painting or make a movie in this case. Because I believe the people that wrote this movie were inspired loosely by this event, by the Donner Party.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, dude. Okay, so I think we're done with our academic segment here, which was the Donner Party. And I guess we can move on to something a little bit brighter than this. Because we got a little, you know, I guess... philosophical semantics stuff, but you know, it is what it is. So yeah, that was our academic segment. We'll be right back with our Know Thine Enemy segment after these messages.
Stoner Chicks.
We're four friends who met through comedy and bonded through weed. I'm Grace Penzel.
I'm Kayla Teal.
I'm Stephanie Thompson.
I'm Phoebe Richards.
If you love smoking weed and laughing with your friends, this podcast is for you.
Weekly episodes will drop on Fridays starting April 2nd, so subscribe now to Stoner Chicks wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming to your favorite podcatcher soon.
Okay, everybody, so we are now at our Know Thine Enemy segment, in which we talk about the villain a little bit more in depth. So, the one person in this movie, Monica, that was... you know, the main antagonist, if you want to call him that, villain, would be none other than Colonel Ives.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, in the movie, he it wasn't really explained. I mean, it makes sense for him to be the colonel because when you first see him in the movie, he claims to be a European immigrant called, I think, I forgot his first name, but his last name was Calhoun.
Uh-huh.
And he claims that the people that he was traveling with got trapped in the mountains in the snow. And this person by the name of Colonel Ives, which happened to be a military officer, led these people into the forest because he thought he could find a shortcut, you know, so kind of like in the Donner Party.
Yeah.
Situation. So he says that this person, Colonel Ives, like, misled all of them into the mountains, and when they started dying, they started eating each other, stuff like that. So very similar to the mm-hmm. story we just talked about. And eventually you find that, I don't know, I mean, it makes sense again for him to be the colonel, because a general from the U.S. Army takes him to the fort and says, oh, this is the new person in charge, Colonel Ives. And it's the same guy.
Yeah.
So I guess it would make sense for him to be the actual real colonel. I don't know what you think of that. I mean, because, like, if he was just, like a regular person, why would a general think he's a colonel and put him in charge of that? I mean, I don't think the uniform would be enough.
Weren't a lot of people back then able to pass for, like, random shit? Because who else were they going to ask for validation?
I would get it in the case of everyday life, for example. Like, if they were applying for a job and, oh, yeah, I'm John Smith and whatever. But if you're claiming to be a military officer, I think there would be some sort of scrutiny that they would, or some sort of process that they would, you know, to identify somebody. I mean, I think maybe I'm giving too much credit.
I don't know.
Especially,
I don't know. I feel like there's movies where I feel like this has been done. They pretend to be generals and stuff. I don't know.
Because back then, of course, there's no IDs, there's no like licenses or like the. Maybe you got some sort of military ID, but it wouldn't have your picture because it wasn't available back then.
No, and like everything was like through word of mouth. So let's say you knew a lot about the specific person. You could pretend to be them, mm-hmm. especially if they're dead and they haven't found their body because you ate it. Yeah. I mean.
So it's possible he could be either the European immigrant Calhoun, but I mean, I call him Colonel Ives because that is how he plays himself for most of the movie.
So, yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm going to call him that for the purposes of this analysis, I guess.
Okay.
So, his classification would be dual natured because he's a regular person. He's a human being. He's not a supernatural, like, ghost, demon,
mm-hmm.
apparition, or otherwise. He's a person, but he does have a dark side to his nature. He's a cannibal.
Yeah.
He leads people to their death or kills them outright to eat their flesh so he can gain their powers, their strength.
Mm-hmm.
So, as we talked about a little earlier, his origin, it would be that he was a man afflicted with tuberculosis.
Okay.
That was pretty much terminal. He declares at some point in the movie that he is on his way for a hospice facility.
Uh-huh.
So, when you go to those places, that means you're already, like, you already know.
That
That your time is coming, and that's just the place you chose to be in to kind of, like, spend the last 3 days, you know?
Yeah.
So, that is when he tells the main protagonist, you know, Captain Boyd, that he heard the story of the Wendigo from a Native American scout.
Uh-huh.
And to prove his point, he killed the scout and ate his flesh.
Wow.
So then, the more that I did it, basically, the better my condition got, and the tuberculosis was completely gone after a while.
Damn.
So, we talked about the Wendigo a few episodes ago, right?
Yes.
So, we have talked about him. And that's mm-hmm. kind of, that really is the main idea, right, behind him?
Yeah, kind of. Uh-huh.
That it eats a person's flesh, or it's a person that becomes a Wendigo because they eat flesh. And they have to keep eating it in order to stay alive, but they also get their strength from it, like, their, like, more power, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, in a way, I mean, it is kind of loosely based. They don't make it the focus of the movie too much. I mean, they don't explore any other lore or any other aspects of the Wendigo legend. But I guess that's kind of what they base themselves on to make this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, his motivation, like I said, at some point towards the very end, he declares that he wants to make the army fort basically a safe haven for cannibals.
Mm-hmm.
And that because around that time, like we mentioned earlier also, that it was a time of westward expansion a lot of families will be traveling and seeking shelter mm-hmm. from the elements. So his idea was that I'll just get a few people in my little coven of cannibals here.
Yeah.
So he wanted to get the, you know, the Captain Boy, the main protagonist, mm-hmm. and also one of his fellow soldiers, and also like a general in the army.
Mm-hmm.
So that the whole operation had credibility, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to have no more than like 5 or 6 people around. Mm-hmm. And whenever people started migrating to California in the spring, because at this point in the movie is winter.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, oh, in a few months it'll be spring and people will be traveling back and forth. And we'll be able to take our pick of people that we can eat.
Jesus.
And he was like, but we're not going to eat all of them, of course, because that's... They will find us right away.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, no, we'll take our pick. We'll be selective on this process. You know, it's all like philosophical.
Yeah, strategic, yes.
Yeah, and at one point in the movie, he actually injures Captain Boyd. And mm-hmm. he has cooked one of his friends.
Oh, God.
And he's like, well, I stabbed you and you're bleeding to death. So the only way you can save yourself is if you eat your friend right here. Right? So the guy's trying to fight it, and he fights it for... He holds off as long as he can. But eventually he gives in because, you know, he doesn't want to die.
Yeah.
And by this point, Captain Boyd has eaten flesh already, because that first scene where he was in that wagon of dead soldiers, he was drinking their blood for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time he did it. And then there's another scene in the movie in which he eats another one of his friends because he's trapped in a hole somewhere and his leg's broken.
Yeah.
And it's winter and he's there for a while. He can't get out because his leg is broken. So he eats his friend and his leg heals like from one day to the next.
Damn.
So it's crazy, dude.
Wow.
What do you think of all this? Like, I mean, we know now that medically it's unsafe. It's unhealthy. It's not, I mean, of course. But in the case that you actually had to eat mm-hmm. a person to survive, it's medically unhealthy for you because you can develop a sickness in your
yes.
brain.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think?
I'd rather die. Like, why am I going to eat another person? Like,
you're going to die either way.
Exactly. Might as well do it with dignity. If you are afraid of death, I get why you would, you know, do whatever you can to survive, but... I don't know, man. I don't think I'd be able to do it.
I don't think so either, man.
I just died. Let it take me. Let death take me.
Because, like I just mentioned, we have the knowledge now that if a person eats human flesh, you know, for an extended amount of time,
uh-huh.
their brain develops a sickness called Kuru, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
In which it's a degenerative disease. So that means yes. that your knowledge... Your motion, like your motor skills start deteriorating, so you can't move anymore, you can't walk properly, you start having all these shakes, kind of like Parkinson's, I guess.
Yes.
Not only that, but your mind starts going away, like like your brain basically decomposes,
turns
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you're not meant to eat people, dude. Like, you're not just not meant to. And that's in the case that you actually, like, you really had to, like, to survive. I mean, you're gonna die of starvation or this thing. So it's like...
Yeah.
I mean... I don't know. It's kind of like between a rock and a hard place, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think I would agree with you. I think I would, you know what, just let... I'll just...
I'd dump myself off a cliff or just let myself die just like that. Just, you know, force myself to sleep until I die. Yeah. But I don't think I would eat another person... Not even my dogs, dude. I couldn't. Mm-mm. Like, just having it... No, I can't.
It's a difficult position for anyone to be in, I think. Mm-hmm. It's a moment that would define a person's character, I think. And having to live with that, I mean, let's just imagine.
I couldn't.
And this guy in the movie, I mean, he didn't care.
Yeah.
Because he's a villain. But... So he has no morals. He has no, like, whatever. At one point, he actually says, morals are the last bastion of a coward.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess to justify himself, I'm saying like, well, you have morals, so that means that you're a coward. You're not adventurous enough to join me in this crazy adventure that I'm embarking myself in. So, as far as his powers or abilities, I mean, we see him gaining a healing factor of sorts. Mm-hmm. But, and basically, the more food he eats, the faster his wounds regenerate.
Yeah.
The stronger he becomes. So he has above average human strength. Mm-hmm. Which comes from, you know, drinking the blood of people he kills, or eating their flesh, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
By this point in the movie, like towards the end, he's done this several times, so he's pretty strong. He's pretty, like, strong app. So, as far as the weakness for him is that if he's not allowed to eat human flesh for an extended amount of time, then he starts losing that power.
Mm.
And also, he can't really process regular food anymore. He can't eat beef. He can't eat chicken anymore. I mean, his body won't tolerate it. So, this happens to anybody that does this in this movie. And actually, there's a scene in the movie in which one of them, he had actually convinced another soldier of this fact, because he had killed him, or, you know, wounded him mortally, and when they went out to find the people that were kidnapped in the cave, whatever.
Uh-huh.
He had stabbed him in the stomach, and he was bleeding to death, but he comes back and he says, he gave me the flesh of whoever it was, one of our friends, and I ate him, and I nursed back to, like, to health. But then that guy realizes, you know what, I can't live like this anymore, so he asks Captain Void to end his life.
Yeah.
But the idea is that, I mean, if they sustain enough damage, they can still be killed even with this power inside of them.
Yeah.
So, for example, if he's shot in the head or whatever, then that would end his life automatically. There's, like, no way he can recover from that.
You know, mm-hmm. Like, they're not immortal. They just, like, have the ability to heal themselves to a certain level.
Yeah, so they would have the ability to heal themselves, but not from every wound. I mean, and mm-hmm. if they are mortally wounded, but they're still alive, if somebody feeds him, like, a piece of flesh, whatever, they could still theoretically recover.
Interesting.
So, it's really weird, like, I mean, how they portray this myth. I mean, I guess, again, that's part of the Wendigo legend, that the more they eat flesh, the stronger they become.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also insatiable. They can't stop eating. Like, that's the one thing they want to eat forever. Like, they can't stop craving it. So, I'm going to give this guy on the scare meter 7 out of 10 skulls, because he's basically a serial killer.
Yeah. Yeah?
With, like, superpowers in a way, because he can recover from getting stabbed or whatever, you know, as long as it's not, like an immediately mortal wound, he can still recover.
Uh-huh.
So, and he's very cunning, too. Like, the way he talks in the movie, he seems like a very educated man.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like somebody that would be able to convince people to go on this little adventure with him. So,
like, he has charisma and all that, yeah.
Uh-huh. So, can you imagine, like, if he had actually succeeded in converting this guy into his ways? Just picture this, like, there's a little fort in the mountains of California, and you're traveling with your friends and your family. Haha, you find this fort, and you're like, it's full of, like, crazy cannibals.
Like, that's a nightmare right there.
You're living your best life, trying to find a good place to live in California, and then, like, bam.
Yeah, taking a picture for the Instagram, and then...
taking a selfie, you know.
In the middle of the woods.
Facebook Live, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Present day Blair Witch Project shit, but with cannibals. No, thank you.
Wow, dude.
So, that's why sometimes I think about, like, I think twice about camping, because I have always wanted to go, but I'm like, what if I pick the wrong spot, dude, and I don't come back because there's, like, serial killers or cannibals? Or just weird fucking animals that are trying to murder me? Like, it's scary.
Yeah, dude, no, I don't think I would ever be able to go out camping.
I'd have to be with a lot of people. Just in case.
I am definitely not an outdoorsman, my friend.
I am.
I could learn, I guess, to, like, build a fire. I mean, I know how to build a fire, but I need a ladder. I need, like, ladder fluid. I can't, like... I gotta cheat a little bit. I can't, like, do a little stick... trick, yeah. Whatever, like, I can't do that, you know, like, I can't, like, What is it, like the flint, the strike the rocks, whatever, with the spark? I don't know how to do that. I mean, I guess if I had to, like, if I had to, I could figure out a way to, like, hunt an animal, like a rabbit in the forest or something to survive, but...
Yeah.
I mean, when it comes to stuff like that, I kind of just pick the meat pack from the store and don't even think about where it came from. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's we live a comfortable life, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For the most part. I mean, as far as... So... Yeah, so that was our Know Thine Enemy segment. We talked about Colonel Ives and his evil ways of cannibalism. And we'll be right back with our closing remarks after these messages. Monica, the audience, myself, Le Sad Face for tonight, because we are once again at the ending of our podcast episode.
Wah, wah, wah.
Indeed, my friend, indeed. So we want to thank everybody that took some time to listen to us today. If you are a first-time listener, thank you for joining us. We hope you come back for more. You can browse our library of past episodes, and hopefully you find something you enjoy in that list. If you are a repeat listener, thank you very much for being part of the faithful EMBL squad. So,
we should make little loyalty cards and give them out to our faithful listeners. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of doing with that 3D logo that was designed for us the other day.
Uh-huh.
Maybe sending like little badges of honor.
Loyalty.
Yeah. Like,
To
the people that have worked with us in the past, of course, our guests and everything, and people that support our podcast, that definitely do it. I would definitely send some of this stuff their way. So, yes, thank you, my friend, for reminding me of that.
You're welcome.
So, I need to ask you this question every time. But, I mean, I know what the answer is, but do you have any shout-outs?
Crickets. No.
I saw your expression, and I was like, yeah, I know.
See, if you guys email me, maybe I would have shout outs to give, but no one cares about me, so
guys, don't be like that. Email Monica, you know, our email is partly or largely her responsibility.
Yeah.
So I mean, we've been getting emails, but it's been like random like stuff. I mean, I've been checking it every now and then, and it's just like, eh, like I don't need this in my life. So yes, go ahead and be a good sport and email us. We'll remind you of that link in a minute or two here. But I got some shoutouts of my own. I don't have too many this time. But I want to give our thanks to the Illumi Potty and Twitter for being supportive. They are always retweeting our stuff, sharing our links, commenting, doing their good deeds with our posts, my friends. So thank you to those guys. There's too many of them to name. I think there's about 30 or 35 people in there. It's a group chat that we are a part of on Twitter. I mean, they are very, very cool. So I usually tag them on our posts. So, you know, if you don't know who they might be, you can just look at the stuff that I post on Twitter and you'll find them there. And also, I want to thank my friend Alex, because this is a little bit non-podcast related, mind you, but he's the one that's designing the cover for my music EP that's going to be released or dropping in a couple of months.
Nice. So. That's awesome.
And you know Alex, he's the one that worked with us in that Professor Gildea story.
Yeah.
So he's cool. Thank you, Alex. He's been my friend since middle school for about, I don't even want to say how long, 25 years already. Wow.
Aw, what a loyal friendship.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a graphic designer. He's awesome. He's done some work for me in the past, and he's really good.
Nice.
All right, so let's remind our listeners, Monica, of the place in which they can email you to make your day, make you happy. So we got our Facebook under Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends, and we got our Instagram under Myths Behind LGDS.
Our Twitter is Myths Behind LGDS, and you can also email us at mythsbehindlegends@gmail.com.
All right, and we have our Letterboxd under Myths Behind LGDS, which is a movie blog type of place. You can do reviews, make your lists of movies you like that you don't like, etc. And we have our website, Monica, which is under myths-behind-legends.mailchimpsites.com.
Yes!
I don't know what that was, but that was cool. You're kind of just like messing with your hair and going back and forth, and that's I like
that. Yeah. I'm like falling asleep already. It's late, guys. It's late out here.
Yes, it is. Well, it's late for me. Imagine that. I'm like 2 hours ahead of you. So.
I know. It's past my bedtime, you know? I should have been in bed like 4 hours ago.
Plus, I'm drunk, mind you, so I mean, whoa. And I got to work tomorrow.
I'm a little buzzed, too. My wine's practically done, so yeah, this is making me sleepy, actually.
All right, so our hint for the audience, Monica, next time I'll do this one because, you know, of your present condition here, but we are going to not do a movie next time. We're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to share some folk stories with you guys about ghosts and legends from a certain place and where we're from. So let's just say that, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that one. It should be a great episode, I think. I found some interesting stuff to talk to you guys about. Hope you guys enjoy that when the time comes. But in the meantime, that would be all for us tonight here at Exploring the Myths Behind the Legends. We hope you had a great time once again. And we hope you come back for more on the next episode. And I want to wish everybody a great night, evening, early morning, cannibal buffet, whatever it is you guys are doing. Be careful out there. Be good to yourselves, to each other, to everyone around you. And until we see you again, have a good one.
Bye.